This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Kami mas sayang kuasaan ini, sayang tanah. Nenek moyang kami, sudah berapa turunan kami tinggal di kuasaan ini. Beratus-beratus kami tidak sombong, tidak suka lentak memindah kami dari kuasaan ini. Itu saja.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. We are continuing with our Stay Home and Watch series, which is done in collaboration with the Freedom Film Network. So for the last couple of months or so, the team behind the Freedom Film Fest have been releasing a specially curated Freedom Film playlist every weekend, which is dubbed the Weekend Watch with Freedom Film Fest, and this is happening on their YouTube channel. So each thematic playlist has allowed us to revisit some of the many films from the FFF vault, all of which invite us to revisit the many human rights issues that have been brought to the fore thanks to these thought-provoking films made by people for the people. So this weekend, the playlist features stories from Sarawak in conjunction with Sarawak's Independence Day, which was yesterday, the 22nd of July. And four films will be featured. One of them is the 2011 film Ulu Bengoh Darum Pin, which was directed by Joachim Leong. And he's joining me now to tell me more about that film. Welcome, Joachim. How are you today?
Hi, Juliet. I'm good. Thanks.
Thanks so much for joining me, Joachim. So I know that, you know, when you made this film a long time ago, 10 years now, right? It's your 10th anniversary of this film. You were a non-practicing lawyer at the time, but tell me, how did this non-practicing lawyer, you know, come to make a film about this?
So actually, the credit doesn't just go to me. Obviously, Wang Yao, a friend of mine, both of us studied in Nottingham University. We read law, we came back, we practiced for a year or so. He stayed on practice. I mean, and we were very idealistic and wanted to do something for the country.
Right.
And, you know, they always say that you can be young and idealistic only once. And we met Ong BK, our producer. He has made a film with Freedom Film Fest in the past. And what happened was we did an election observation mission with him. That was the, I think, the general elections just before the state elections. State elections, yeah. So we went down on the ground. I went to Ulu Bengoh. I was an election observation for that constituency. And from there, that's how we got to know him. And there's another long story behind how we ended up doing the film, yeah.
Okay, all right. And, you know, Ong BK, I just interviewed him a couple of weeks ago. Of course, yes, you know, he is also, he did films about Penang, but now he's based in East Malaysia as well. So let's talk about the setting of this film, right? So as you mentioned, it's just after Sarawak's 10th state elections, am I correct? And
yes.
The area of Bengoh was actually labeled a hot seat, quote unquote, because three of the villages there were set to be submerged by the proposed Bengoh Dam, right? But all this came to nothing because, you know, when the results came out, the incumbent, who was from BN, Dr. Jerip Susil, he retained his seat with a majority of, I think, over 3,000 votes. And I guess, you know, the question then was like, why, right?
Yeah, so we were curious as to why the results didn't go the way as we expected. We heard different stories or accounts of the candidate didn't get to visit all the voters in that 10-day period election campaigning period. So we wanted to investigate why and how serious, or maybe it wasn't as serious as we thought, or were they last minute promises given out, or were they, what was going on the ground? Like the problem with, I think Ong BK pointed out that there's not much media coverage in Sarawak, and even during elections. I mean, election is the only time media coverage increases in East Malaysia. Everyone was eager for a change in government and looking towards East Malaysia. So I was personally interested in this topic as well because I'm actually from Kuching, Sarawak myself. I was born there. So I had some personal investment in finding out why as well.
Sure. Okay. And talk to me about the big issues that was happening there. So, I mean, it all kind of boils down to native customary rights to land. Am I correct? What was happening in Bengoh? You know, tell me a little bit about what the issues were.
Yes, so there was a dam which was being built and it was meant to supply water to Kuching. But at the same time, you had villagers who were forced to move. They were offered resettlement, they were offered compensation money. But we wanted to find out ourselves from the villagers themselves as to the promises and whether the promises were kept. How did that translate into votes for the incumbent or votes against the incumbent? So we really wanted to investigate, and we were very lucky to meet a few villagers who were willing to bring us to these villages and talk to other villagers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, I know that filming this wasn't easy. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But, you know, in the film itself, you know, you and your collaborators, you actually lay out how difficult it is to reach these different villages. Tell me about that, you know, reaching these places, speaking to the villages. How did you go about doing that and getting all those interviews?
So first I have to lay out the difficulty of our producer, Ong BK, who he himself was trying to go in other activists to capture footage of interviews with his villagers, but he was barred. He couldn't get in. They recognized him. He couldn't get in. And he sent a few other activists to try and get some footage. That failed too. So Wang Yao and I were the third team to go in and try and capture the footage. And you have to remember, this is 2011, where smartphones don't have, you know, as such good resolution as back then. So we had to sneak in cameras. We brought in a DSLR and we had a video camera. So we had to sneak this in, and we were a bit scared whether people stop us because we look out of place. And so we had to hike in 1.5 hours. And even though I was much younger back then, it was very tough. It was a very tough hike.
Yeah.
And we were aching at night every time we stopped and interviewed. And the lighting wasn't great. And we were all constantly worried that people might stop us or villagers might question us. Oh, what are you doing here? Why are you taking so much? Why are you asking so many questions? And we were constantly on guard at all times. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, somehow we managed to come out with that, with all that footage. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was very, I mean, you tracked to all the different villages. Well, there are many villages in the area, but four were the main concern that you visited, right? I mean, who are those four villages? Can you remind, for the sake of anyone who hasn't seen it, why were these four villages the ones that you wanted to speak to?
So the different villages reacted differently. There are some who took the money, some who, our main tour guide, Simo, led more than half of a village away to higher ground, because if they took the compensation money, it would mean that they extinguish their right to their customary native lands. Mm-hmm. So the NCR. So he wanted to preserve that and preserve their lifestyle, as most of these people are farmers, and that's the main way they would earn their income. If you move them to a resettlement, they would be forced to work in the city. Mm-hmm. Although a recent report says 1 hour away from Kuching, but you know, your lifestyle is very different from what we imagine it to be, and everything you need is in those villages. You know, if you need food, it's so plentiful around, it's so easy to grow things in those valleys. So each village had a different reaction. There was a fourth village which had a bit of income from tourism, so that was a very interesting different outcome. They were more pro BN, mm-hmm. because obviously they have received some benefit from Dr. Jerusalem, some development. So whereas I think Ong BK wanted to stress that these villagers don't have any alternatives. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about alternatives in terms of just at the ballot box, but alternatives in the sense that no one is giving them an alternative to develop their livelihoods, develop their give them options. It's not about changing their lifestyle, it's like giving them options. So one good thing which came out from this film was that some money was raised, some donations received, and we actually went back a second time to build micro hydro generators for the villagers. Mm-hmm. So it was just to build on that success and give them options to stay on in that place. And
Yeah, okay. And I guess, you know, in the film itself, right? I mean, I'm correct in saying that you were the narrator of the film, right?
Actually, it's Wang Yao.
Oh, Wang Yao, okay. Okay. So, I mean, when he was narrating, he said that it's a story of broken promises, right? Missing candidates, being kept in the dark, all these things were issues. And, you know, in the film, you point out, like, you know, there's no access. I mean, it's completely disconnected. There's no internet. And, you know, this is back in 2011, no phones, no smartphones. And I think you very cleverly in the film itself pointed out that none of the other representatives, none of the other candidates actually even visited them. They didn't even know who they were. Am I correct?
Yes, I had to interview the candidate from back then. He was from PKR, Willy Mongin.
Yep.
And from the reaction on the film, you can see he was very nervous, and yep. he didn't visit. But actually, after the film, he did tell me that he did go and visit. Like, he did make his presence known, visited the villagers, hiked there. He showed me pictures of him lying stretched out, and eventually he won the. He won a seat. He won a parliamentary seat in the recent general elections. Mm-hmm. So I think films like this can give a kick on the behind to some candidates to get the work in.
Yeah.
And I mean, and it takes time. It takes time for opposition to, you know, establish itself, build ties with the local community. So yeah, that was, I guess, a positive outcome from the film.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of us sitting in the cities, we're like, oh, how can you keep voting for these people? Look what they've done to you. We don't understand what's actually happening on the ground. And this was a wonderful, you know, example of, you know, what's actually happening, you know, why they vote the way that they do. It's that whole rural-urban divide, right, that you were trying to tackle as well.
Yeah, so, Ong has always been on this. And when you go visit the rural areas, there are people who are aware of the issues. You know, there are some who maybe just want to live their life. There are some who will just follow the village head. If village head says, oh, vote for A, you know, just go to the ballot box, you know, do the right thing.
Yeah.
Do the right thing. So it's quite mixed. It's not as straightforward as people think. And I think it's great that we managed to get the story out and give options to the villagers in terms of development.
And you know, you highlighted things like, you know, how they were some villagers were given compensation money without a copy of the agreement. You know, there's some shady things happening here and there, you know. So there's a lot of, I guess, like the narrator said, a lot of things were being kept in the dark, so, you know, people aren't fully informed the way we are over here in cities, right?
Definitely, yeah. There are some who can't even write or read, so that gives an opportunity to be taken advantage of. Those who are a bit more educated, who spend more time in the cities or in West Malaysia and build connections with other people or met lawyers, they tend to know their rights. They tend to appreciate that there's more at stake. And I think I meeting Simo, the our tour guide and the village head, you can see that there are people, you know, on the ground there who are willing to protect their rights and bring people together. So it's great that we got this story out, and I was very lucky to meet someone like Simo and his fellow village people. Yeah,
definitely. And let's talk a little bit about the making of the film. Like you said, Ong was not even allowed past the guards. You had to sneak in. You know, there were several expeditions, not just one. Let's not even talk about the trekking that you had to do. Tell me a little bit about the whole filmmaking process.
So it was quite a team effort. Although we hiked in for, I believe it was five nights or six nights just to get all that footage. Mm-hmm. And we came out, there was also from Sarawak Bebas who was taking footage of CG Hao. Ong BK has been to the villages and taken some footage as well. There were other volunteers who contributed footage. So, but the bulk of it, obviously the interviews, it was not easy because you have to understand when you go to the villages, there's no electricity except for a few houses which have generators. Mm-hmm. So you can see that some footage is really dark, really grainy. Yeah. I'm so sorry about that. It was 2011. We had not enough electricity. We have no experience on filming at all. You know, we were just given, nah, take this DSLR, take this video camera, handheld video camera, and go into the jungles. And we were kind of, you know, and obviously we were a bit anxious about the whole situation.
Sure, of course.
Yeah. But we didn't meet anyone who stopped us or anything or asked questions. So we were quite lucky. Maybe I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, gosh, that shows the power of film, right? I mean, yes. I mean, I just watched it today, and footage maybe is not like a cinema quality or whatever, but you get the message. I didn't mean that as an insult. I promise you that. But it shows that, you know, you really, you know, it was not easy to get it done, but you still managed to weave that story together and provide that narrative and, you know, explain the situation, explain all the different issues, which, as you said, you know, was not really covered by the media at the time. So that was great. You know, I think that's the power of film, you know, in whatever form you can get it.
Yeah, I think Anna was like, you know, it's a message we need to get out, and I think she's been working with such communities, and it was a great opportunity given by Anna and FFF and also Ong BK, and yeah, I was really lucky to have that opportunity. You need to be young and artistic ones. The power of film really is amazing. I mean, you look at what's happened in the last 10 years. I was reading up as well. The villagers there's a bit of ecotourism going on. Mm. So they get the option to preserve their lifestyle. I think Dr. Jiro Susip is on immense pressure to retain his state seat now, since Willy Mongin has won the parliamentary seat. So there is, you know, competition only makes people work harder and be more transparent, hopefully. And that's the hope from the film. And Ong BK has always been about, my producer has been always about providing their options and choice to the East Malaysians, and it's for them to decide at the end of the day, but someone has to be there to give them those options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, that definitely came through, you know, the film, watching it even, you know, 10 years later. I didn't know about the issue, so it was a wonderful kind of look back in history about what was happening there. So the film is only about 25 minutes long or so. But, you know, have you gone back to visit since the making? You did mention that you went to do some projects there, right?
So Ong did send us back to, I think there was supposed to be a second film. I did go and go back. We went back with an electrician from Penang, and funny story, he would spend the whole day setting up the hydroelectricity for them. They would go to the cities and bring back the equipment he needed or the materials he needed and build everything according to his specifications, and he would, you know, shout at them and everything, and, you know, and there's a bit of language barrier, but he tried his hardest. And at night he'd be resting sore from all the hard work, and the villagers would help massage his body. So that was a really funny scene which stuck out my head, you know. And I think this community spirit of the villagers to get through it, and also how little we need to survive in this world. I think seeing these people so happy, even though all these issues were going on around them, they did take it seriously. But Ong was always like, "Oh, don't laugh about it." But they were very happy. They were very lighthearted, like not burdened. They were sad at times, but they weren't like burdened. They just got on with things. So I think it was a very powerful experience as a filmmaker also to be there to witness it, and going back and seeing them get on with things, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you did manage to go back, and I think you did manage to put in all these generators? No, mini hydro.
Ong BK managed to put in those mini hydros, and he did send other volunteers to talk to other villagers to see whether they wanted electricity provided to them. Mm-hmm. So there was some very kind-hearted people behind giving funds to help develop the rural areas as well. Yeah, that's really great.
Okay, all right, excellent. So, you know, the film is, of course, being re-released this weekend. You know, for anyone who's coming to it with a fresh pair of eyes, you know, what do you hope that they will take away from it 10 years down the road?
Yeah, so a lot of things has happened politically in Malaysia, and I was thinking about this, like, although the outcomes can't be controlled, but I think the lesson the villagers learn and the lessons we have to learn are quite similar. So we need to appreciate that, you know, we have the options and they're right there before us. And when the elections comes, we should go out and make a choice. You know, the villagers did that. If you watch a film, they did do that. And eventually 10 years down the line, they did change the government. Mm-hmm. But of course, we know some of that has reversed a little. But the point is that we have these options. We have choice, and hopefully, that translates into better policy and better candidates. And that has happened and more competition. I think more competition in the political scene is a good thing. And that's what happened in Bengal itself. You had a missing candidate. You had candidates who just showed up nowhere. But you had a candidate who was willing to work and make improvements. Mm-hmm. And in the end, the villagers had a choice between two candidates who were there for them. So that's who wins in the end. The people win in the end. They have more options, more people willing to serve them.
Mm-hmm. And you know, also holding those people that you elected accountable for what they promised you, always
definitely.
Letting them always know that, you know, if you don't fulfill your promises, you're going to be voted out in the next elections. You know, ultimately, you are our representative, not the other way around.
Definitely. So it'd be interesting to see what happens next year, definitely.
Oh, yes. We are all waiting for that. Thanks so much, Joachim, for speaking with me today. Any last message that you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah, do check out the other Freedom Film Fest films. I was looking through on the YouTube. There are quite other interesting films that I haven't checked out too. Do support Freedom Film Fest and also the other filmmakers. I think you covered the pair up No Silver Lining, and that's a good one, I think.
That was great.
Sarah did a great job with that. And obviously, that's exactly what's happening around the whole country. So do check that film out as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, what's so fascinating for me speaking to all of you filmmakers, you know, all of this was done like maybe 10, sometimes even 12 years ago, just as relevant today as it was when you guys made it. I don't know whether to be happy or sad about that, but here we are. And, you know, we've got some things for reference to look back on. But thanks so much again for speaking with me, Joachim. And just to let everyone know, there are three other films also being released this weekend. There's also Unlocking Bengo. There's the story of Kam Agong and also Penghidup Aku. All of that will be available on the Freedom Film Fest YouTube channel. Just search for that and, you know, enjoy yourselves finding out about more about issues happening in East Malaysia. And if you missed any part of today's interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can search for the podcast on the BFM app or at bfm.my/learn. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
We ourselves have been kept in the dark as to the actual reality in the rural areas. Whether we like it or not all votes are equal. Rural votes do matter more than ours in the grander picture. Malaysia's rural votes hold the key to change in Malaysia. Is it time to recognise that rural Malaysians or Sarawakians deserve to be given all the options and the information to put democracy to work for them? Shouldn't they be entitled to make their own choices with their eyes open rather than imposing choices on them? For everyone's benefit, the unfair rural-urban divide should go, but who should take the first step?
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.